All right, so this morning I found a couple stories that I wanted to start with, just because it gives us an idea of culturally a lot of times where we're at with different things this morning. So the first story is this first grader, little girl, little first grader gets invited over to her friend's house. And they're having supper that evening, and the vegetable is buttered broccoli, which sounds wonderful to me, but the hostess, the mom, asked the little girl, "Well, do you like broccoli?" And she said, the little girl said, "Well, I love broccoli." And the hostess said, "Well, that's great, that's great." And so they sit down and they're passing the trays or the plates around, and the broccoli comes to the little girl, and the little girl that said she loved broccoli, and she says, no, I don't want any." And the hostess was really confused. "Well, I thought you said you loved broccoli." And the little girl, well, "I do, ma'am. I love broccoli. I just don't love it enough to eat it." Which there's a lot of truth to that story, I think. Another one is a letter, a love letter of sorts. It says, Dearest Jimmy, no words can express the great unhappiness that I've felt since I broke our engagement. Please say you'll take me back. No one could ever take your place in my heart, so please forgive me. I love you, I love you, I love you. Signed, your dearest Marie. P.S. Congratulations on winning the lottery. Right? That's how love works a lot of times. We love something, but not enough to eat it. We love something when it's something in there for us, right? And that's true, I think, in general, and it's fun to laugh about it, but I think so many ways in our culture, in our world, that's what love looks like, unfortunately. And that's going to be what we're going to look at over the next several weeks, starting a sermon series called Better Together, looking at how we can, as a community, work better together. The idea behind it being 40 days of community, and I haven't taken a math class for a very long time. 6 weeks of sermon series, six sermons don't equal 40 days. So we're going to go over past Easter just a little bit if you're going to follow along. I've got a couple more of these books around if you want to do the devotions. But if you got one, start it today, and what we talk about this morning is going to kind of lead into what the rest of the week's devotions are for you, and that's going to happen throughout the next several weeks. With it, the overall purpose of the series is to remind us of our purpose. And this is, again, a series from Saddleback Church, Rick Warren in California. And the first part of the series is 40 Days of Purpose, or the first part of those of the set of series that he has is our personal purpose. What is my individual purpose? What is your individual purpose? We'll talk more about that in just a minute. But now we're going to look at the purpose of our purpose. What are we here for? What on earth are we here for? Is the tagline from it. And so none of this is going to probably be very profound for most of us. We've probably heard this several hundreds of thousands of times, maybe even. But the fact that the Bible over and over and over and over and over and over and over repeats how we should live together, how we work together, our community aspect of our lives, I feel like it's worth spending that much time over and over and over and over and over again talking about it as a group in sermons in different ways. Because none of us get it perfect ever, right? And even when we get it right, the one time, the next time we fail miserably, right? That's just the way our personalities are. It's just the way we are as people. The hope, and my hope for this series being a little bit different maybe than some other series or some other things that we've looked at, is we're going to be very practical. And that's why you needed a pen. That's why we have things in your bulletin that you have. I didn't ask that either. If you don't have a bulletin, you're going to need one of those too. Does anybody need a bulletin? Did everybody grab a bulletin? Your own personal bulletin, not to share with your spouse. I will actually grab those quick too. Everybody's got their own bulletin? Oh, wow. Good job. All right. If you don't have one, I'm willing to stop and take a second to do that. Again, if you're not writing, when it's time to write, I'm going to publicly embarrass you, okay? And it'll be on video. No, okay. All right. Or maybe I can't. Did someone say they can't? I can't publicly embarrass you? Probably not. So anyway, getting back to what the purpose is we're going to, again, try to be very practical. Things for us to do, not just show up and listen to a sermon on Sundays, but how can we do this tomorrow, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, all the way through the rest of the week? What can we do to do this well, or do this better, I guess, maybe? I know I definitely need work in those kind of things. And it reminded me of my classes, right? When I was way back, when I was in undergrad, I took some, you know, science classes, and you take a biology or chemistry, physics class, and you have a lecture time, right, where you're taught and you're someone's instructing you and teaching you, but then you have a lab time as well, where you're doing the experiments, you're cutting open the frog and labeling all the different yummy parts, and I never did really well with that. I wasn't that kind of a boy that dissected things, so... But that's the point, right? We're going to talk about it this morning. The rest of the week is your lab, is your experience. And so I want us to be very purposeful about that. I realize COVID restrictions, those kind of things are going to be part of this. There are still millions of things for us to be able to do, to be able to practice some of these things as well. So that in mind, before we jump into the text that we're going to look at this morning, I just want to lay a little bit of the foundation behind this series, because like I said, this is us together, but this is going to assume looking at what is my personal purpose, what is your personal purpose in life. That's really kind of hard to say. Okay, I shouldn't have tried again. So first of all, let's lay that foundation just a little bit. And so what is Rick Warren, what do we look at in our lives? What is our purpose here on earth? And the first one is worship. We were made to worship. Looking at the Bible, looking at the holistic view of our world, we were made to do that. That was our whole purpose. And not just show up on Sunday morning singing songs and those kind of things. Worship is everything we do every single day, throughout the day, all decisions, everything that we do. I mentioned the term God goggles last week. And I think that that's really the point of our lives. It's looking at this world in such a way that everything we do, everything we think, everything we are a part of, every decision we make is for the purpose of worship. And everything goes back to that idea. Everything. Especially when we say we're followers of Jesus, that needs to be our primary focus. The second thing is fellowship. And again, all of these are going to go back to worship. Fellowship is how we spend time together within a community that is like-minded, fellow Christians, fellow believers. That fellowship, getting to know each other, encouraging, challenging one another, is that fellowship time. Again, going back to how can we worship and love God through that. Discipleship is part of this whole thing. That's another purpose that we have. We're growing as Christians. We're getting to be more and more like Jesus, not more and more like a standard, any other standard, but more and more like Jesus. Are we growing? Are we taking those steps to do that? The fourth thing is to minister, and this is serving those around us in any capacity, in any form. This is a part of discipleship. It's a part of fellowship because we can do that together. Obviously, it goes back to worship. But it's serving. It's loving those around us in different ways, helping out in different practical ways, even just prayer and those kind of things as well, is ministering. And the last one is evangelism. This is bringing more people, others, into that relationship with God. And that was a lot of stuff real quick. Like I said, he spends a whole series, 6 weeks of series, on those topics. If you want more information and you want to learn more about that, even just reading The Purpose-Driven Life would be a good start. I think I have a copy I can let you borrow. But this just gives us an idea of, this is what we were made to do. As an individual person, we were made to worship, fellowship, disciple, minister, and evangelize, bringing other people into that relationship. And with that, though, the next step is we do these things together. How do we worship together? How do we fellowship better together and bringing others along? How do we grow together, minister together, and evangelize together? And that's what we're going to look at over the next several weeks. So looking at that and thinking about that purpose, how does my purpose become our purpose? And really, again, that foundation is something that we've you know, talked about before. Even a few weeks ago, we looked at 1 Corinthians 13, and that's what we're going to kind of base a lot of what we talk about over the next several weeks. But the foundation is what really the second part of Galatians 5:6 says. It says, but only faith working through love. How do we move forward? How do we do this together? Only faith working through love. And faith, again, is that aspect of belief, right? I believe that Jesus is the Son of God and what he's done for me and died for my sins. But it's also doing something, right? The act of faith, the step of faith, the leap of faith is a part of that. And it's only done through love. That is what our purpose together is how do we work our faith out? How do we live out what we say we believe in our lives on a day-to-day basis, a moment-by-moment basis, decision-by-decision basis? And so again, looking at this holistically, we all have room to grow in this, right? We all have opportunities where we can work our faith out better, but not only that, but working our faith out more dynamically with a loving attitude and perspective and everything. And I get, like I said, I can do this, I need to do this work just as much as anyone else. And so we all have room to grow. We all have opportunities for that as well. Looking at that, what we're going to do is, like I said, a few weeks ago, we covered 1 Corinthians 13. We did a really quick overview of it. Over the next several weeks, we're going to kind of look at the different parts to be able to define love a little bit better for us to be able to move, live in a world that expresses that love in a more dynamic way and hopefully a more holistic way. But this morning, we're just going to look at the first three verses of 1 Corinthians 13 and just see and just focus on what does love look like in a holistic way? Or what does it really not look like, I guess, and to a certain extent? And so let's read 1 Corinthians 13, the first three verses. And Paul is writing this to the people of Corinth, kind of to summarize and just to kind of set the stage, just to summarize what he's been talking about the dynamic in that church and the relationships they've had, especially in terms of some of the conflict that they faced. And that's kind of what the Corinthian letters really are focused on in a lot of ways. And so this is what he says. He says, "If I speak in the tongues of men and of angels, but have not love, I'm a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal. If I have prophetic powers, I understand all mysteries and all knowledge. And if I have all faith so as to remove mountains, but have not love, I am nothing. If I give away all I have, and if I deliver up my body to be burned, but have not love, I gain nothing." Again, most of us have heard that probably hundreds of times, thousands of times maybe even. So we've heard those words, we probably understand those words to a large extent. But when we look at it, and Paul really breaks out five separate things, if we really look at it, we start to realize, we kind of summarize it and say, well, nothing matters unless it has love, which is true, and that's what he's saying. But sometimes we don't look at the individual parts of our lives and say, okay, I'm doing this, but is it in love, and am I doing it with the right motivation, the right attitude, the right emphasis? And if not, Paul is saying, maybe it doesn't have much meaning. And so we're going to talk about those five things that Paul talks about this morning. And first he says, if nothing I say matters. And that's hard for me because I like to talk. And this covers all sorts of gamuts, especially in our culture, right? We have TikTok and we have YouTube, Facebook. We have a lot of different things that we can say. But Paul is saying, nothing I say matters if it doesn't involve love. 1 John 3:18 says, "Little children, let us not love in word or talk, but in deed and in truth." And so anything that we say, anything that we might express, any way that we might bring things out, if it's not done with the attitude and the mindset and the emphasis of love, then it's at best it's meaningless. At best it's worthless. At best it has no purpose. And what it means, and when it talks about meaningless, and all these are going to kind of apply the same way, it's not saying it has no value. It's just saying that the value that it has doesn't mean anything. And so, especially in terms of our relationship with God, right? I can say all sorts of things, and I could say true things and maybe even good things and positive things, but if I say them out of spite or anger or anything that's not love, then my relationship with God isn't getting any better. My dynamic between me and God isn't getting any better if I'm doing those things, saying those things without having love. And the same goes, I think, for relationships between us. If I am saying or expressing things with you know, you guys or on Facebook or whatever, if I'm not doing it from a loving, holistic, godly attitude, then it really ultimately is not worth doing. It's meaningless. It has no point. If you listen to Biden's or watch Biden's inauguration, the poet laureate just did a beautiful job with her poem. If you haven't heard it or haven't listened to it, I encourage you to Google it. Because it is just powerful and dynamic. I have no idea what her attitude was. I have no idea why she wrote it that way or what her mindset was. I have to assume it was something very meaningful to her, the way she expresses it. But I don't know if it came from love. And so if it didn't, right, it can still have power and meaning and it can still be beautiful. But with her relationship with God and ultimately maybe even our relationships with God, it may not have the meaning that it could have if she brought it from an act of love. An act of sacrifice, an act of, I want people to know this for things to get better. Let us not in love in word and truth, or word and talk, but in deed and in truth. The next thing Paul says is nothing I know matters. Without love, nothing I know matters. And I struggle with this one too, because I like to have information. I like to know things. And especially with internet, having a phone in my pocket, I can Google and pull out anything and learn things. And I love information. I love to get, be able to talk about almost anything, at least to a certain extent. In fact, I heard President Obama was really good at that. I'd heard that he could talk about any topic with about anyone, at least to a certain extent. And I would love to do that. You know, if you bring up quantum physics, I would love to be able to say, I've heard it before, more than I've heard it before, right? I want to be able to have a conversation. That's the type of mentality I have. But it really doesn't matter, Paul is saying, right? If I'm just doing it for myself, if I'm just doing it so that I can feel better about me, if I'm just doing it so that I gain or I learn or I gather things, none of it really matters. Information is just information. Knowledge is just knowledge, unless it has a purpose of love behind it. If I'm doing it for someone else, if I'm doing it, for me, this is an example. You know, I may not care anything at all about the Minnesota Timberwolves, right? They're my home team and everything with basketball. I don't care anything about professional basketball anymore. My 14-year-old just enjoys watching all the games and being a part of it and who the players are and what they're doing. I've tried to learn a little bit just so that I can at least have a conversation with him, right, about it. To me, that's an act of love. I don't care anything about it. I have to spend some time and energy to make sure I know at least who the players are in order to have that conversation. To me, knowing that just to know it is worthless, but knowing it for the purpose of having that relationship with him, well worth it, right? And we all probably have that with our kids or grandkids in different ways as well, right? But Paul is saying, and knowing it, even if it's good, even if it's true, even if it's right, unless it's for purpose of love, who cares? 1 John 4:8 says, anyone who does not love does not know God, because God is love. Anyone who does not love does not know God, because God is love. Right? To love is to know God. To know God is to love, is to know love. Paul also says, nothing I believe matters. Right? And we can believe all these good, right things, right? And in fact, we've kind of developed, I would say maybe even more in our background, our tradition of the Christian churches, we've maybe developed more that as long as you believe the right things, as long as you know the right things, as long as you have the right beliefs and understanding, then everything else is okay. But that's not what the Bible says. The Bible doesn't say it's about belief, right? It's the baseline, right? You have to believe certain things. You have to believe that Jesus died for your sins and Jesus is the Son of God. You have to believe those things to a certain extent. But ultimately, in the end, it's not about belief. It's about living that belief out in a holistic, loving, faithful way. And so the myth of just believing the right things is wrong, right? Because I think we can believe different things and still all have the same, have a powerful, dynamic relationship with God. And so Paul uses the phrase faith here, and faith, again, like I said, is more than just belief, it's belief lived out. And so he says, if you have enough faith to move a mountain, remove a mountain, right? That's a pretty dynamic faith, right? It's a faith that you believe these things, that God can do these things, and you're actually living it out, right? If I'm going to say, move that mountain, and it actually moves, right? It doesn't matter if it's just for me. Right? I could stand and I could, you know, part the waters and say, look at me part the waters. If it's about me and it's about what I'm getting and about my focus, then I could part all of the waters in the world and it doesn't make any difference. Right? It doesn't make any sense if I'm not doing it because of love for somebody else, for sacrifice, so that God can be acknowledged in some way. So nothing I believe, even acting things out, is important. In fact, 1 John 4:20 says, if anyone says, I love God and hates his brother, he's a liar, for he who does not love his brother whom he has seen cannot love God whom he has not seen. And that's the nature of faith, right? If we're going to say we love God, that's a good belief. That's a true, that can be a true statement. But if it's not lived out, then that belief, that faith does not match that belief, right? Sometimes I hate that verse because that's hard. There are people, right, that we get frustrated with and angry with and annoyed with, and maybe we wouldn't say hate, but it's close sometimes. And so we need to make sure that we're working, you know, working that out and figuring out a way, well, does my belief truly come from an act, or does my belief come from an act of love, my faith come from an act of love, or am I just doing things or saying things or believing things because? Paul also says, nothing I give matters. Without love, nothing I give matters. And sometimes that's a little challenging for me anyway, because usually when we think of giving, it has to be sacrificial, right? If we're giving, whether it's time or money or resources or whatever, it feels like it almost has to be sacrificial. It almost has to be an act of love. But we also know there's lots of people and, you know, even ourselves to a, you know, to a large extent, that give because we get something back, right? We give because we feel good about our giving, or we give because it's a tax write-off, or we give because the community will look at us and say, well, look what they did, and all the things that we accomplish. But God is saying if we're just giving for our own glorification or our own acknowledgement, then he's saying, who cares, right? That's worthless. It does not help your relationship with God in giving that way. And I've struggled with that because I've given because I feel like it's the right thing to do, or out of guilt or those kind of things before, and I had a terrible attitude about giving, and I know I shouldn't do that, but I do it anyway. And then I always feel like terrible afterwards. I shouldn't say terrible, always terrible, but oftentimes. Because when I give, you know, and I sacrifice, I mean, it is an act of sacrificial giving. I don't know if it's an act of sacrificial love. But if it's just being given because I feel guilty or feel I have to or it's the right thing to do, then it falls well short of, and my relationship with God, I think, is worse if I do that. Because I get angry and bitter and resentful in those ways in the times that I've given, not because of good reasons. So Paul says, if you're going to give, don't give except for the idea and the act of love. And lastly, he says, nothing I accomplish matters. And especially in our culture where we're just so doing-based, so accomplished, so success-based, this is a really hard one. And even in our background, the Christian churches, I think we're a very doing church mentality. But if we're doing things, it's great, right? It's great to, you know, help out here and there, or help at the church, or do these kinds of things. But if we're just doing it because that's what we always have done, we're just doing it because we're going to get some acknowledgement or because we feel we have to, it doesn't help the dynamic, especially in our relationship with God. Doing needs to be accompanied by an act of love, a desire of love. And it's not just a feeling, and I should have probably started with that. It's not just about feeling, right? We know that. If we're only going to do things that we feel like, you know, when we feel an emotion of love, I probably wouldn't get out of bed a lot of days, right? Kind of a thing. We don't always feel it, but that doesn't mean that we don't choose to do it. And I'll read a quote here in just a second, but doing without love is, again, worthless in the long run, or meaningless in the long run. Again, going back to this idea of this crashing gong, these crashing cymbals, the clanging gong, and what is the purpose? And this image that Paul uses here, I really love this image. He says, if I deliver up my body to be burned, and that, I think, alludes back, several people think it alludes back to Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, right? And Daniel, where they're told to bow down to this idol, and they refuse to, so these three men are thrown into the fiery furnace, right? They're willing to sacrifice their lives, they're willing to sacrifice everything in order for their faith to be true. And to me, that's an act of love. And so we could give up everything, we could sacrifice everything, we could continue to give and give and give, we could accomplish all these wonderful things, but if it's not done from the idea of love, in the long run, it really doesn't matter. Because our relationship with God isn't affected, and really our relationship with others, I think, is negatively impacted a lot of times. And so Paul says, basically, you know, we could summarize and say, basically, if it's not done in love, it doesn't matter. But specifically, if I say, or if I know, or I believe, or I give, or I accomplish anything, and it's not done in love, then what's the point? Which brings me to the standard. Jesus gives us the standard for this idea of love. So what does that love look like? Or what's the standard of that love? In John 13:34, Jesus tells us this. He says, a new commandment I give you, that you love one another just as I have loved you, you also are to love one another. The standard for that love is not your spouse or your neighbor or your kids or your grandma. Granted, a lot of grandmas would be great examples, but he says the standard is what I did on the cross. That is the standard of love that I call you to. That if it's not done in a sacrificial, a fully giving idea of love, then in the long run it doesn't matter. Especially that relationship that we have with God. The standard is what Christ did on the cross, not grudgingly given, not even hesitantly giving, but a fully giving of himself to die on that cross for us to have that salvation. And so looking at that and looking at that as a command, again, I think love is such an important, to look at this that way is such an important part of this. Again, love's not a feeling, and so what is love? Love is a command, right? We're told to do it. For those of us that are followers of Jesus, you have no choice. You gave up that right to whatever, I guess, because we're told and we're commanded to love. Not just here, not just in the greatest commandments, but all throughout the book of, you know, throughout, well, John especially seems to focus on it. But love's a command. We're told to do it. We're instructed to do it, commanded to do it, which therefore makes it a choice, right? It's not just about how I feel, right? It's not just about, do I really feel motivated lovingly towards this other person to do it? Not always. But that doesn't mean that my motivation can't be love. So we choose to love because we're commanded to love and we can choose to obey that command. But to me, those are essential, obviously. Those are vital. But to me, this is just as important, especially in our culture, as love is a commitment. We are choosing to be a part of a relationship, of a community, of a dynamic in some way that we're committed to doing to those people, but we're also committed to doing it in love. And to me, commitment's such... I would say I'm going to blame my generation to a large extent. Commitment just seems to be going away and away and away. We're just losing that commitment so much. And we just jump around to different things and different people and different relationships. That commitment to love the commitment to love is such a huge commitment. And something we need to choose, not just one in time and we're done. This is something we choose to do on a moment-by-moment basis. And that being said, again, love isn't always something we feel. But C.S. Lewis, and I think there's a balance here, but I think I really like what C.S. Lewis says here. He says, do not waste time bothering whether you love your neighbor. Act as if you did. As soon as we do this, we find one of the great secrets. When you're behaving as if you love someone, you will presently come to love him. And so there's a balance here, right? We need to check our attitude, we need to check our emotions, but sometimes we just need to go out and do it too. I may not ever feel motivated and feel the love to do something for him, but that doesn't mean that I can't check my attitude and say, okay, I'm going to do this because I think it's the best thing to do, because it's the right thing to do, and I need to do it, not just do it to do it, but do it and figure out why am I not loving that person. And so there's a time where we give and we do and we accomplish, and that love comes after, or that more of that emotional thing comes afterward. And so that's I think, what C.S. Lewis is saying here, is finding a way to do it and finding a way to love that person while we do it and sacrifice while we do it allows that feeling and that emotion and that relationship to come afterwards. And finding that balance, I think, is so important. With that, we're going to close with something very practical. And that's why you need a pen. That's why you have the calendar in your bulletins. Is we're going to find a way for us to do this purposely. And the idea behind it, again, is what is our attitude and how are we coming to it? Are we able to love the people around us well through that? And so what we're going to do is I'm going to set a timer. I'm going to give you about 3 minutes. And what I want you to do is look at the next week. You've got about a month there. You've got almost the 40 days on your calendar there. Is at least for the next week, is right in there something, a loving act that we can do this week to practice this. And it can be very simple. It can be something as simple as writing a letter. It can be as simple as maybe even a phone call or a text or just a word of encouragement, something practical every single day this week. Preferably, you know, you can start kind of in your family, you know, someone that lives with you maybe, but hopefully it's someone beyond that, that there's someone, some way that you can touch and reach out, and not just prayer. I mean, prayer's great. You should be praying for people. That's great. But I want this to be something that's relational, that we are connecting with somebody outside of ourselves, and it's being done in an act of love. And it can be, you can do big, right? You can, you know, write a check and send it to somebody that you know that needs some money, or I don't know how big that is, but, you know, stop over and, you know, help somebody clean their house, bake some cookies. I'm trying to think of things that I want you to do for me. No, I'm just kidding. But what kind of things would you like someone to do for you? Would you like to get a car? Would you like someone to stop with a meal? Something practical every single day for someone or a family or something that's out there. And even if it's just you're going to write a postcard every single week or every single day for a different person, and you're going to mail those at the end of the week, great. That's a great starting spot. But there are so many people, and I just look at our church and the people that we're missing here that haven't been able to come because of the pandemic and stuff, they would love a phone call. Some people are a little harder to talk to on the phone than I found, but because, I don't know, they just figure out where I just feel like I'm yelling in the phone with some people, but something, And so I encourage you, everybody I think should be writing, right? You have a pen, you have a thing. So go ahead and take 3 minutes. I'll set my phone so it doesn't go any longer than that. And every day this week, finding something to do. Of course you have. I'll get it. 3 minute timer. If you need help, raise your hand and I'll give you some ideas. All right, there's 10 seconds left, so you keep writing for 10 seconds, but I'm going to finish it up here by saying, put this on your, wherever you're going to see it, on your, somewhere on your car, your, whatever the thing you steer, what steering wheel is, on your fridge, somewhere where you're going to see it. And I really challenge you to, you, this is, there's no excuse, because I say it all the time, I hear it all the time, well, I really should do this, I really should call this person, I really should do this and that, and this is your opportunity to do it. And I encourage you to go home and fill in the rest of the month, and for the next 40 days, just purposely finding ways to love people around us and practice this. With that, let's go ahead and pray, and we'll close this morning. Gracious Father, again, thank you so much that you've created us in such a way that we can have the capacity to love, that we have the capacity to experience the love that you provide for us. And we are so thankful that you love us so deeply, that your Son came to die on the cross. And such a huge thing, the least we can do, really the very least we can do, is to reply back to in your love to those around us. And help us to especially love those that maybe we struggle with or those that are hard to love, Lord. But we just pray that over the next 40 days, we are able to see you work in our lives and help us to grow in the way we love those around us. Pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.